Hello and welcome to DGT Radio, DGT's knowledge sharing podcast, exploring themes and topics that are relevant to our everyday work. So I'm here today with three Irish colleagues. We're in G6 in Rue de Genève in Brussels, in DGT's office buildings. And we are going to talk about the Irish department, DGT's Irish department, which is a bit of a special department. So I have with me today Shana, Robert and Tommy. Thanks a lot for joining.
Hello. No problem at all.
Thanks for having us, Caroline.
So as I was saying, the Irish department is a bit special because you are, I think, the youngest department in DGT, and you are split between Brussels and your home country. And you had an unusual start as well. So first, can you say maybe a few words about yourselves? Maybe Shana?
My name is Shana Nirorthy. I'm acting head of unit of Unit 2 in the department, and I've been in the commission for just over 5 years now.
My name is Robert Gunning. I'm now the quality officer in the Irish department, and I've been here since 2007. So time flies when you're having fun.
My name is Tommy O'Connell. I started actually the same day as Shana over 5 years ago. I'm a web translator on the Irish department, and before coming here I worked in Irish language media, so the web work fits in quite well with what I did before.
So now if we talk about the development of the Irish department, when did it start and how did it start?
Okay, that's one for me. So I think I was maybe the sixth translator to be recruited in 2007. So we were a very small group at the beginning, and then we grew incrementally over the years, but quite slowly, until around 2020, when we recruited a lot of people because we were looking forward to the end of the Irish derogation, which came about. And around that time, we were made into a full department also.
What was it like at the beginning, Robert, when you were only six? Did you have a huge amount of work? Was it a lot of pressure?
No, actually, because the derogation that was in place at the time meant that we only translated co-decision regulations. So the workload was quite manageable. It kept us going, but it was no pressure compared to the pressure that, you know, we're under at the moment. Mm-hmm. I suppose back then the pressure on everybody was less. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. So in a way it was advantageous because it meant we had more time to decide how we wanted to go about the work. You know? And for me it was excellent because I had no previous translation experience. But I would say almost everyone else who was there before me had. Some of them had come from the translation service in the Irish Parliament and stuff. So for me, it was great. I really, you know, I had the opportunity to learn a lot, you know. And, you know, I'm very grateful to the people who were there at that time because they showed me the ropes, you know. And then I had the opportunity in my way to pass that on to the people who came after me.
When did Irish become an EU official language?
It was in 2007, after a long, protracted campaign. And we're very grateful to the people who were so active in that campaign because, you know, it's such an important issue for so many of us in Ireland. And yeah, it's such an opportunity for us to be here doing this work. You know, this kind of, added sense of purpose because of the difficulties or the struggle that existed in order to have Irish established as a working language.
So Ireland joined the EU in 1973. So why wasn't Irish already an official language at that time?
Well, yes, it's a very good question. Well, the government were asked by Brussels if they would like Irish to be an official language, but the government actually declined the offer. I think it's a good representation. It shows well the sort of the sense, the lack of confidence around the language at the time during the 70s. But as Shana mentioned, there was a campaign then started. The campaign, the roots of the campaign, the seeds of the campaign started probably in the late 90s. And then by 2002, 2003, was a strong campaign here for status in the EU. Really a grassroots campaign by the Irish language community, led by people like Dr. Padraig O'Lyne, who wrote a lot of academic papers on the whole issue on how we could become an official language. I was actually a student in university at the time, and I was involved in the campaign. And I remember the fantastic day we had in 2004, where thousands of people came to the streets of Dublin to show that support for this request. And then finally the Irish government then set the ball rolling here in Brussels in the EU. Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned, we got the status in 2007, mm-hmm. and full status just last year.
So if we get back to the Irish department, you are now a fully fledged department. You have two units. Shana, you're the acting head of unit of one of them. How many are you now in the department?
So around 60 in total. And it's been like the expansion has been very rapid in recent years. When Tommy and I joined 5 years ago, I think there were 18 people in the department. Wow. So yeah, that expansion has been like it's crazy to see the difference in the last number of years. From a personal perspective, like I was worried because I really liked the atmosphere in the department and the sense of collegiality, and I just thought there was a really nice feeling in the department, and I thought that I was really afraid that we were going to lose that with so many people joining so quickly. But I really don't think that has happened. I think that we've managed to hang on to that, and I definitely feel like it's a really nice department to work in.
And I know that some of you work in Ireland. I was telling Tommy the other day that when I heard that some Irish translators were ingrained, I thought it was some kind of technical term. You know, I thought, am I supposed to know this term? Ingrained. And then I realized that it was a place. So how many translators are ingrained?
There are 12 in Grange, which is in County Meath and kind of the middle of Ireland. And the reason that we were able to set up an office there is because there was a commission office, a Sante office there already, and they had some space. Okay. And we were fortunate to be given the go-ahead to have some of our staff located there because it meant that it was easier for us to recruit. I suppose it's similar to having an office in Luxembourg. We don't have an office in Luxembourg, so it's kind of the same thing, really.
So you are talking about recruitment. Yeah, I was wondering, is it difficult to recruit Irish translators? And what do you do in terms of recruitment? Do you organise promotional activities?
It hasn't been that easy, really. It's been something that we've been working on for, obviously the recruitment process started long before I joined, but in recent years it had to be escalated, and it wasn't that easy. And until we had the go-ahead for the places in Grange, it was quite difficult. But having said that, at the same time, the government in Ireland have been taking certain measures in order to have people trained up so that it meant that we had a lot of very young people joining us, which is nice. And the way that we went about recruiting was we had a series of selection processes as opposed to EPSO competitions. And that was a way that we sort of got people initially. And then there were later on EPSO competitions. For instance, Tommy and I had joined on temporary contracts. We had joined as temporary agents, and then there was an EPSO competition, and that's how we became permanent officials.
Yeah, I think it's taken time for the community back home to realise there are the jobs available, but the last number of years there's been a lot of publicity in the Irish language media and English language media back home, different campaigns by ourselves. We're quite active on social media as well. We have a department Facebook page, for example. Okay. So the word is really, really spread. When, like years ago, maybe 15, 20 years ago, before the jobs came along, translation at this level wasn't really on the radar. After 2007, that changed a bit. Then gradually, you can really see younger people now are really aware, because we go back, our translators go back on schemes to talk to university students and so on. So you can see a new cohort of people coming through who are aware of these translation jobs and are quite focused on them. So this sort of the new generation of translators, okay. Irish language translators, is really coming through now.
Are there translation study program in Irish universities?
A number of universities have translation programs at undergraduate and master's level. Galway, DCU in Dublin, the universities in the North, University of Ulster and Queen's. And Irish is a part of those courses. So yeah, we do indeed.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I am the VTS coordinator, the Visiting Translator Scheme coordinator. I know that one of your colleagues, Orla McGrory, am I pronouncing her
yes.
name right? Yeah. She went to Northern Ireland in 2022, end of 2022, and she talked to students and to professors in several universities. And I hadn't realized that Northern Ireland citizens could actually work for the institution. So can you maybe tell us a few words about this special status that they have?
Well, maybe as somebody from the North, I'll take that question.
Okay.
Yes, we've always had, people in Northern Ireland have always had the option, the choice of being an Irish citizen, British citizen, or both. So we all have the option of having Irish passports, for example. That was actually, we're celebrating this week the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. And we had the right already, the Irish government always gave people in the North the right to be Irish citizens before the Good Friday Agreement, but it was sort of ratified, it was put in stone in that agreement. And so anybody in the North has also the option of being an Irish citizen, which obviously leads us into European citizenship.
You talked about the linguistic derogation. How did it happen? Did it happen from one day to the next, or was it a progressive process?
It happened incrementally. There was a council regulation in 2015, I think, that laid down the various steps that would be taken from then to the 1st of January 2022 to gradually increase the amount of documents that we would translate until we would be on a par with all the other languages. So really, when we were just translating the co-decision regulations under the full derogation, if you like, we were translating about 10% of what the other languages translated. And then year on year, we added certain documents, but it really didn't make that much of a difference. You know, it didn't create that much pressure on us, especially in light of the extra recruitment we were doing, until, when the final increment came into place, if you like, when the floodgates were opened on the 1st of January 2022, and we had to translate everything mm-hmm. that all the other languages mm-hmm. translate. But by then, we had managed to recruit enough people, enough translators anyway, and it wasn't easy. Shanna here was the acting head of unit in one of the units, and she did Herculean work, I have to say, and we managed to get through that first year, and now I think things are going smoothly.
Would you agree, Shanna? Things are going smoothly?
Yeah, I think we had a steep learning curve last year. We were it happened at the same time as the war in Ukraine.
Sure.
So there was a lot going on at the beginning of last year in terms of workload. We handled it and we got through it, and we don't expect ever to be in the same position again. We'll never have another increment, so that's one thing. And also, during the year, everybody gradually became accustomed to the new workload. Mm-hmm. So by the end of the year, things had settled a lot. Yeah, mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. it's great to be on this side of it.
I wanted to say a few words about the Irish language, which I find really quite beautiful, I must say. How would you describe the Irish language, maybe in a few words? I mean, which language family does it belong to?
Well, Irish is a Celtic language. So there are six Celtic languages, and they're in two groups. There's a Brittonic side, which has Welsh, Cornish and Breton in France.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a Gaelic branch, which is Irish Gaelic, Scottish Gaelic and Manx Gaelic. And out of those six languages, Welsh would probably be the strongest, and we would be in the second strongest. And so that's the sort of linguistic background. Yeah, so we're a different language family than other languages in mainland Europe, for example.
Is it still an Indo-European language?
Yes, still an Indo-European language. Yeah, and you can see similarities when you look at some certain Romance languages and even Germanic languages with the same Indo-European roots.
Right, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, we're a bit unique in certain ways.
Uh-huh.
Linguistically, VSO languages, for example, not many other Indo-European languages have the verb at the start. Initial mutations are quite different in Irish as well. You know, with the start of the word changes, the letters and the sound changes, which is quite unusual in other Indo-European languages.
Can you use e-translation to help you translate from whatever language, or mainly English, into Irish? Is it useful? Does it work for you?
It's very useful.
Okay.
Yeah. It takes, it does need, you know, you can't just use it, you have to post-edit it, you know.
Of course, yes.
Carefully as uh-huh. well. And it can make, you know, shocking mistakes, but also it can be very accurate. And even, you know, when it makes a shocking mistranslation, the fact that you don't have to type out the whole mm-hmm. segment also helps okay. a lot. So it's really, it's helped us a lot. I don't think we would be able to produce as much translation if we didn't have it.
And did neural machine translation change something? Was it better after? Because we started with the statistical machines and now we're into neural machine translation. I know that for some languages, like I think Hungarian maybe, or even mm-hmm. German, it really changed a lot. Was it the case for you or?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the statistical machine translation was no good. It didn't help at all. The neural machine translation is phenomenal. You know, it's really, you can't compare the two.
Have you ever tried to talk to ChatGPT in Irish?
Some newspapers back home have covered stories about this where they've asked ChatGPT some questions and they reply in Irish very, very well, very, very detailed. Okay. It's not as good as English, but it's getting there, yeah.
Is there any topics that I haven't mentioned that you would like to talk about?
I think maybe like the Irish language community here in Brussels. I think that's like something that people might be interested in hearing about. Like, and Tommy's very active in that.
Yeah, I suppose as a lesser used language, minoritized language, back home there's a big sense of camaraderie within the Irish language community. And it's sort of carried over here in Brussels as well. In many ways, it's like a big family. Like most of our social, for many of us, our social life is through Irish here as well in Brussels, which might surprise people back home. But yes, it's all really to do with the EU jobs as well. Mm. Not so much in Luxembourg, I guess, but definitely in Brussels, there is a set, we have many social events, not just in work, but outside of work as well. And I think it's quite helpful for when new people come over, they realise, wow, there's an Irish language community here. You can mm-hmm. have a bit of a life through Irish, which is great. Mm-hmm. Actually, last year we set up our first Irish language festival here in Brussels.
Oh, wow.
Eggshed in the Brushilia. Mm-hmm. It'll be taking place in May this year again. Mm-hmm. So we have different authors and writers coming from Ireland to talk about their work here, different musicians. It will be launched in the embassy. The embassy have been helping us a lot as well. So, yeah, there's a bit of a scene, Irish language scene here as well, mm-hmm. as well as the work, which really
okay.
helps.
Yeah.
So you need both.
But just that's not the Irish language department that runs the festival.
No, indeed, no. It's the wider Irish language community have uh-huh. organised this. Events will take place in the city centre. But it sort of adds to the sense of
community
we have here yeah. in work. You know, so okay. it's yeah.
But does the Irish department still organise something for St. Patrick's? I didn't see anything this year, or did I miss it?
I was just thinking of mentioning that. Yeah, that was a lovely tradition that we had going back to like 2008. I think it started, and it was,
I remember dancing at St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, it was very popular, and it became kind of, it got highly developed, you know, so that there were kind of different things that had to be done every year, mm. Like the Irish coffees, and the dancing had to be practiced for a long time beforehand.
The music.
But obviously, COVID put a stop to it, and then when we came back after COVID, I think this year would have been the first year where we would have been, you know, legally able to have it. But then we ran into a lot of logistic problems because the room where we used to have it in G1 isn't mm. available anymore. I think the canteen here in G6 is being used for other purposes. And also our department now has so many people in it that if we all attended, there wouldn't be much room for the other colleagues, you know, because yeah. it was kind of before a small Irish unit holding a party for the rest of the colleagues.
Well, hopefully, I know a lot of people were very interested in the party from different departments, so maybe next year we can look at this again and get something together. Yeah, it'd be good.
There, I wasn't there because I was in Ireland, but there was a St. Patrick's Day party just for the Irish.
Oh, okay.
Don't let anybody know.
Sorry.
And how do you say goodbye in Irish?
Slán.
Oh, that's an easy one. Slán. Okay, well, thanks a lot to the three of you. Thanks again. And slán.
Gormaigat.
This was DGT Radio. We were talking about DGT's Irish department with Shana, Robert, and Tommy. Thank you for listening.